The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Brace for impact, buckaroos, because your skulls are about to take a gargantuan blast of action-packed jackassery to the fucking ear holes. An audio explosion so mind-numbly extreme, protective headwear should be mandatory to listen to this level of inane horseshit. So lock and load, buttercups, and prepare your tiny minds for your monthly assault of grade-A action movie mayhem, filled with enough high-octane carnage, insane shootouts, and nose-busting fisticuffs that Michael Bay himself would weep like the little product placement bitch that he is. Now duck and cover, my little cupcakes, because it's time for the Men of Action Podcast, a show packed with enough testosterone-filled bravado, it could take down a small nation. So here are your hosts, those cheeky bastards themselves. From America, it's the notorious Scott K. And from England, it's the cynical Mr. Smith. They may be secret meat, but you can bet your ass they're packing some serious fucking heat. Shit's about to get explosive.
Hidey-ho, you slack-jawed sons of bitches, and welcome to the Cheeky Bastards Are the Men of Action Podcast. I'm the notorious Scott K.
And this is Mr. Smith.
And we will be your cantankerous, opinionated host on this monthly action film quest, where we pit two kick-ass action films from an action star or action director's catalog against one another in a no-holds-barred battle to the death to see which one truly reigns supreme. And what better way to kick off, no pun intended, spring than with a Van Damme-a-ling-a-ding-dong kickoff to see which Van Damme mullet is the moistest. But before we travel back in time to figure out where the fuck Wilford Brimley got his dodgy Creole accent, it is my pleasure to welcome in my curmudgeonly co-host from across the sea, Mr. Steve Smith. Mr. Smith, welcome aboard. And how do you find the end of Valentine's Day month as we're finally, when this drops, it's going to be almost fucking spring, baby. With the fake global China world climate change, it is already spring. At least, like, we've got these weird peaks and valleys of temperatures here. Like, last week it was cold. This week it's warm. It feels like spring. It's going to get cold again. Like, my balls and nipples don't know what to do.
See, you
know,
they're either direct and shriveled. I'm all for global warming over here.
Over here. I know. I live in a part of the world where, like, hey, most of the shitty parts of my country are going to be underwater soon. So I'm like, bring it on.
Yeah. Our weather sucks, so, you know, bring on the heat. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, and for all of you out there who are affected by global change and dying, over here, it's not so bad.
If I can sit out in my back garden in March, fuck them.
I don't care that you're dying of feast, famine, and all other shit, all right? You should have stayed a part of the colonies.
I'm an animal. Your mother's an animal, you son of a bitch.
Speaking of animal, now I've never had the even when I had hair, I never had the locks of hair that would have allowed for a moulet, as the French call them. Did you yourself ever have a sweet head of hockey hair?
I used to have very long hair when I was about 21, but not a mullet.
No, you just went straight Metallica. Everything's long, motherfucker.
Just do it. Just don't fuck around. You know, you're sitting on the fence, aren't you? You know, it's like a guy who wears jeans and shoes. Like, mate, put some trousers on, put some sneakers on. Don't sit on the fence because you look like a joikawar.
You fucking mook over there.
Yeah, so
fucking
my hair was probably down in my ears. So yeah, that was back in the day, though, and now I'm struggling to keep what I've got.
I know.
You bald fuck.
Hey, you sit down and shut up, you big bald fuck.
Oh.
Yeah, I never had the ability nor the predilection to have a mullet. Now, I feel like if you have a mullet, you have to be one of two people. Three, I apologize. Should be three. First, you should be playing hockey. Like, guys who play hockey, pretty tough as it is. No one's saying a goddamn thing to someone who plays hockey with a mullet. Guys are going to rock your jaw. All right? So there's that one. The second one is you better be some kind of action star. You better be able to fight if you got a mullet, all right? You better be a serious, tough-looking son of a bitch to be wearing a mullet.
You got that right.
Or third, you're some shitty, lousy, third-rate country star who will sing about jeans, pickup trucks, beer, football, and God here in America. That's the only other way. Because otherwise, you look like you probably have sex with a sheep.
You derailed this podcast from the get-go. What the fuck is going on?
This mullet derailed the podcast, goddammit.
This is the hair product fucking, bonus episode.
Oh, well, this episode is full of mullets.
Goddamn.
Full of Van Damme mullets.
God Van motherfucking Damme.
Speaking of giving you something extra in the back. A better way to kick it off. And we do our spring, or early spring, late March, early March, whatever. Wherever the fuck you hear this. It's our March recommendations of 2024.
It's time for the Cheeky Bastards monthly movie or show recommendations.
Jimmy, this is some serious gourmet shit.
We are once again on an odd motherfucking episode number. That means the oddest man I know, Steve, I'll give you an odd job in the corner. Smith is going to kick us off with his recommendation for this month.
Ooh. So, from 2022, The Blackening. Directed by Tim Story. Now, The Blackening centers around a group of black friends who reunite for a Juneteenth weekend getaway, only to find themselves trapped in a remote cabin with a twisted killer. Forced to play a racist board game, the friends soon realize this ain't no motherfucking game. The Blackening skewers genre tropes and character stereotypes and poses the sardonic question, if the entire cast of a horror movie are black, who dies first?
That's on the poster. We can't all die first. I love
this
that.
This movie, this was such a surprise. I was laughing my ass off throughout the whole thing. Yeah, it does this thing, all the kind of characters you'd get from a slasher movie there. You've got the gay guy, you've got the misfit, you've got the jock, you've got all the characters. But that's not like they don't poke fun at that. Do you know what I mean? So like the gay guy is funny, but not because he's gay. And it does all these things. Honestly, there's so many laughs to be had in it. So it is. It's a comedy horror, obviously, but it made me jump. It's a bit my only criticism. I mean, I gave it 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It loses a star because it's not bloody enough. It could have done with a bit like Edgar Wright style gore.
Gotcha.
That would have elevated proceedings. Yeah. But still, it was such a sort of, I was like, oh, this is like just a fun movie that had so many original ideas. Yeah, it's not deadly serious at all. Can you remember going back to like next year sometime? There was that film Bodies, 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 which I fucking detested.
I did see it.
Piece of shit. But this is like roughly the same kind of premise, but just done in such a smart.
It's satirical. It's making fun of the stupid tropes.
Yeah, it's making fun of
it's
horror movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a horror movie. And it's still, it's still...
I love the poster. Everyone's black who can't all die first. It knows what it is. And I love the fact that it's playing in that sandbox.
I don't know any of the cast members. Jay Farrow, he's like a impressionist.
Yep. He used to be on Saturday Night Live. Yeah, over here.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know that, obviously. He's in it at the beginning, and there's just a great pre-credit sequence with him and a female comedian. But the board game in question that they have to play, let's just say the centerpiece of the board game is a very racially insensitive object that we won't go into. But there's also like there's a TV screen in the room as well, and one of the friends is tied to a chair, and they're going to,
almost like Saw.
Yeah, Saw.
Yeah,
I apologize. No, forget, like exactly like Saw, where one of their friends is tied to a chair, and every time they get a question wrong, their friend's going, but that's just where the movie kind of begins. That's just the beginnings of where the film goes. It is so much fun. The guy who directed it is Tim Story, who I wasn't that familiar with, but he did He directed Barbershop, Ride Along.
Okay.
He actually directed the Tom and Jerry movie. This guy, you know, he's...
Yeah, he plays in the world of comedy. Yeah, he knows.
Yeah,
he knows
he's, doing. He's just... I just encourage everyone. It's 90 minutes, you know, it's just funny as fuck. It does the right... makes all the right moves for a horror movie. And yeah, it just blew me away. So that is my recommendation for this month.
This is the Certified Gourmet.
I have been wanting to see it. It is on over here on Starz, so I'm probably going to get that free week. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Trial, watch it, and then tell Starz to eat my cheeks. So that's what I'm planning on doing next week.
Worth it. That's worth it.
I was going to go see it when it came out, but it was only, if it was out 2 weeks, lucky.
Yeah,
and it was gone before I had a chance to get to it. So I've been waiting. And every couple of weeks, every couple of months, I'll type in The Blackening and see if it's on. You know, you type it in, view it, and now it's on Starz. So now... I'm going to get a little free week. Thank you, Starz. We're going to watch that and a couple others, and then boop.
I was laughing my ass off, and I was just like so surprised. It sort of, to me, it kind of came from nowhere. I didn't really know much about it, and it just really delivered. So, and I just had a great time, basically. And I really needed it as well. I really kind of needed something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, like I say, just could have done with a bit more blood, but there's little nods to other films. There's all, but it's done in such a subtle way. Give it a look. You'll have a really good time, everybody. That's my rec.
All right. Mine is a synergetic recommendation for those of you who follow the Church of Tarantino, my main podcast, my guest who would have been on this month that came out on the Friday that you're hearing this before this. He was the one who mentioned this movie in our talk, and I immediately that evening put it on, and I am glad I did. And my recommendation is from 2017. It's called 68 Kill. Scraping by flushing septic systems is not Chip's vision of a perfect life, but he's also a simple guy, and he's got a great girlfriend in Liza. Sure, she supplements their income with a sugar daddy, but every relationship has its own complexities. When Liza suggests that they relieve her sleazy benefactor of a stack of cash, Chip begins to see a side of her he never knew existed, or never wanted to admit. Now he's got a gun in his hand, a girl in his trunk, in less than 24 hours to figure his way out of this mess. 68 Kill is a roller coaster ride of a film that delivers non-stop thrills and unexpected twists, with its unique blend of dark humor, intense action, and memorable characters. This movie keeps audiences on the edge of their seats from start to finish. The stellar performances from the cast, coupled with a gripping, bizarre as fuck though it may be, storyline, make 68 Kill a must-watch for fans of gritty, adrenaline-fueled B-movie cinema. It's a violent punk rock romantic comedy for our jagged times. Prepare to be entertained and exhilarated by this wild and wickedly entertaining insane ride. I watched this, and there are moments in it where you go, this is fucking stupid. And then it quickly pivots to going, this is fucking insane. And you can't, it's a car crash. It's a car crash that you can't turn away from. The shit that happens in this gets violent. It's bizarre. It's poor white trash Tarantino. That's what I called it. This is a poor white trash Tarantino movie. It is so fucking bizarre. Like, my wife isn't usually into anything like this. But she was out there sitting in the living room playing on her phone. Now, she was in a TikTok hole, which if anyone knows about women, once they get into a TikTok hole, it's like they've been pulled into the Matrix. They're gone. Like, you could literally shoot at them and they may not know you're in the room. But this movie, and its insanity, forced her to put her phone down and finished the entire movie with me. There were moments where we looked at each other going, that's stupid. That wouldn't happen. That's dumb. This had better not happen. And then we're like, oh, that didn't happen. And then something else happened. And then you're like, holy fuck, that happened. Like, it's fucking insane. It has everything you and I have been begging the Bruce Willis movies to have. It's got sex and titties galore.
Oh.
It has got all kinds of violence, gory violence. They don't cheapen that. And it's got better twists than an M. Night Shyamalan film. And I gave it 3 stars as well. Now, this is not everyone's cup of tea. I'm going to be completely honest about this. Some of you will put this on and go, this guy's out of his fucking mind. And you would be correct in maybe that assumption. But for people like Steve and myself, and maybe some of the people who listen to this podcast, oh man, this is one of those movies that if you're going to get a B movie, this is what you want from it. And the acting is actually pretty damn good. Now, there are some cliches and some tropes you go,
nah, okay. It's a B movie. But, it's to be expected.
But what the director does is he just says, okay, yeah, I may be short here, but guess what? How about this? And you're like, what the fuck?
Well, I've never even heard of this.
I'd never heard of it either.
This is the first I've heard about it.
And the amount of money they're stealing is only $68,000. That tells you the level of intelligence these people have and what they're trying. But it makes it so much more realistic. That's why I call it a poor white trash Tarantino. Because it's bunch of poor trash people in the South, but it's glorious. It's just a glorious film. You'll have so much fucking fun watching it if this is your cup of tea.
I will add it to my list.
This is the certified gourmet.
So yes, get out there, watch The Blackening and 6-8 Kill, and have a good fucking time as we get ready for spring. You pieces of shit. All right? How about this? I know that movie where the guy's fucking the grave of his best friend and he drinks come out of the fucking tub or whatever, this movie that wants to be shocking. This movie is more shocking and more realistic than that horse shit. Anywho, speaking of horse shit, over here.
This is some serious horse shit.
Horse shit.
Horse shit.
Horse shit.
And this is horse shit.
Horse shit. Ah, horse shit.
It's horse shit. Horse shit. Horse shit. Horse shit.
Yes.
Mr. Smith, what should our fans stay the fuck away from in March as to not ruin their excitement for St. Paddy's Day? I don't know. Terrible. I don't think that was Scott. That was no accent. That was just me having a seizure. Having a fucking seizure over here. And also getting ready for spring. What should they not watch to ruin their mood for this month?
Okay, then. This is a shame, this one. This is a shame because I watched the trailer and I enjoyed it and it starred someone I really like. It's a film called Impuritus from 2022, directed by Mike Yurinko. Now, set during the Prohibition era, 1922 to be exact, Impuritus tells the spooky story of police detective Clayton Douglas, who is summoned to a remote psychiatric hospital. Once there, Douglas is witness to the outrageous deathbed confession of a Civil War veteran. Now, the events that follow force Clayton Douglas to confront his own religious beliefs and accept the possibility of possession and the supernatural. Will Douglas maintain his sanity? Will good triumph over evil? And more importantly, will we give a fuck? The answer to that question is no. This stars Tom Sizemore.
The late, great Mr. Sizemore.
Yeah, which is, he seems to be playing Marlon Brando playing Columbo. Right? He's not bad. And, you know, he gives it his all. But he's, in my opinion, he's not all there at this point. I think the writing's a bit on the wall for this guy. He's, you know, he's barely present. You know what I mean? But he's trying. You can tell he's trying. Now, like the Civil War veteran guy.
It's key. It's a key component.
He looks like Beetlejuice. Immediately.
Beetlejuice, the little black guy from the Howard Stern show, or Beetlejuice from the movie?
Like a cross between both.
Okay.
It's just like immediately, this is fucking stupid. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just leave the room. You'd be like, fuck this. You know, they could have been a bit more subtle with the makeup effects. Yeah. That's just a little bit.
But Steve was like, hey, at least it's not a found footage movie.
This is true. I wish I'd have fucking watched, well, maybe not with my track record lately. But I don't want to be too mean about it because red flag, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes long.
Oh,
now for a sort of, you know, straight to streaming kind of movie.
That's a faux pas out the gate, though.
Yeah, but they're all just better off on that, aren't they? You can make it as long as you want. We're fine with that. Well, I'm not fine with that, okay? But you know, so yeah, it's good to see Tom Sizemore in a leading role. But I kind of got the feeling because it was 2 hours and 15 minutes long, I kind of felt like, well, maybe because this is Tom Sizemore's kind of probably potentially last role, maybe they kind of let scenes run on a bit longer because they love the guy and all this. But that's not really his scenes that take up the majority of the film. So it flashes back to what actually happened to this Civil War veteran guy in his earlier days. And it just drags on for too long. You know, it kind of wants to be The Witch. It kind of wants to be all these, you know, there's The Exorcist thrown in there. It's all been done before and better, and it was an absolute slog. Like, everything about the film was amateur apart from Tom Sizemore, so it's certainly not worth 2 hours and 15 minutes of your time. So that's my horse shit wreck this month.
This is the certified horse shit.
You're talking about a straight-to-streaming pile of shit. I'm talking about a theatrical release with a big-name director who has had a decent track record. For the second month in a row, another big-name director takes a big steaming pile of shit on us. And this month's comes from this year, 2024, the first film to enter the action genre of the year. One that had so much promise, possibly, for Mr. Matthew Vaughn, it's Argylle. This film's real mystery is what fucking drugs its slapdick writers were on when they conjured up the cockamamie kindergarten fever dream of the movie's third act. However, kudos to Sam Rockwell, as he is the only bright spot in this preposterous Jason Wick 00 fuckface action tragedy. This film is a fucking catastrophe and would have been better suited if it had dropped its completely implausible, world-renowned spy novelist with amnesia who is really writing nonfiction accounts of her days as the Jane Bourne of the spy world, and focused the film on its cheeky spy team from her novels played by Henry Cavill and John Cena. It is more believable that Betty White is the world's most deadly spy than Bryce Dallas Howard, and she's fucking dead. I was hoping that since we were being visually butt-fucked by this pile of inane horseshit, Matt Vaughn would at least have the common decency to give us a courtesy reach-around and kill off this film's annoying CGI cat in the same fashion as the demise the cat in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation received, but clearly Matt Vaughn is an inconsiderate prick. If for some reason you feel compelled to watch this film, do yourself a favor and purchase the Dune Sandworm Popcorn Bucket on your way into the theater, and once you've polished off the popcorn within, give that popcorn-carrying pocket pussy a vigorous fucking, so at least you'll get some enjoyment out of this film.
This is Certified Horseshit.
Now, I have no qualms with Miss Bryce Dallas Howard. I think she's a pretty decent actress, to be honest with you. She's good. But for me to believe that she has somehow got amnesia, all her novels have been reoccurring accounts coming to the surface of her time as a world-renowned evil spy, basically. And then suddenly, she's triggered into Jason Bourne-like fighting skills. Which I might add, one of the climactic scenes is her and Sam Rockwell trapped in the bottom of a oil-carrying seaworthy barge. As it travels out in the North Atlantic and oil has spilled on the floor, she fashions two pieces of metal to her feet because she's also an actual world-renowned ice skater. And she proceeds to skate across the bottom of the floor on the oil and fight people.
I'm going to have to cut you off there.
When that happened, a gentleman got up out of his seat, said, fuck this shit, and walked out of the theater.
I've heard nothing but bad reports about this.
2 hours and 19 minutes of ball sack punching.
Oof, I've heard nothing but bad.
Samuel Jackson's in it for no reason. He's just there. And then they try to tie it in at the end. Oh, spoiler alert. To the Kingsman series of his?
No.
As you say, mate, sort yourself out. Let it rest, son. Fucking move on from the Kingsman already. Holy shit.
I don't even like Matthew fucking Vaughn. Fuck this guy. Fuck his movies. Fuck off.
And now listen, the trailer gets you. Because you got fucking Henry Cavill in that weird fucking high top fade.
He looks
and
like Dua Lipa looks sexy as shit.
Yes. And then you got like John Cena grabbing off the back of the motorcycle. If it had gone along the lines of like this comedy infused spy movie kind of thing, a little more tongue in cheek, like the old Bond movies. Look at Imperatus. At least it was a B movie and you weren't surprised that it sucked.
Yeah.
When you go to a fucking action movie put out by Hollywood, you expect, oh, the guy who did Kingsman and all this shit, you're going to have a good one, took a big dump. So there you go. Do not put your eyeballs on Imperatus, and especially Argylle.
We just saved you 4.5 hours, guys.
And I just saved you money going to the theater to see Argylle.
Oh.
All right. Everyone stretch out. Get your legs stretched because we're going to do a couple of fucking splits and some roundhouses as we get ready to kick off our Van Damme Lama Ding Dong Showdown as we pit together Time Cop against Hard Target.
Now the moment you've all been waiting for, our Van Damme Langa Ding Dong main event. In the red corner is the 1994 sci-fi action film, Time Cop. And in the blue corner is the 1993 action film, Hard Target. So get ready for a no-holds-barred, head-to-head collision of two Van Damme action movie stalwarts. Two movies enter, only one movie leaves. It's time for the Men of Action movie face-off.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Now, before we jump into our head-to-head showdown, let's look at Jean-Claude Van Damme's career up until this point. Both films came out in 93 and 94, and they actually came out in succession. Indeed. So Hard Target and then Time Cop. In 1993, Mr. Van Damme released two other films prior to this, the first being Nowhere to Run, and then he cameoed as himself in The Last Action Hero.
Nowhere to Run's not bad.
Well, you know, I'm there. And then Hard Target obviously drops, and we drop Time Cop, and after Time Cop, he drops Street Fighter in 1994, where he plays Guile.
Stinkaroo.
And then Sudden Death.
Which isn't
in
bad.
In 1995. So, there are the four films, the two that predate, and the two that follow. These two films that go neck and neck next to each other. And now, it is time to start with Time Cop from 1994.
Woo!
It's time for the tale of the tape. Time Cop was written by Mark Verheiden, based on the Dark Horse comic of the same name by Mark Verheiden and Mike Richardson. It was directed by Peter Hyams, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, Ron Silver, Mia Sara, Bruce McGill, Gloria Rubin, Scott Bellis, and Kevin McNulty. Made on a budget of $28 million and grossing $101.6 million at the box office. It holds a 5.9 rating on IMDb with a 42 critics and 36 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. On Letterboxd, Steve gives this 2 stars and Scott also gives this 2 stars. Max Walker, an officer for a security agency that regulates time travel, must fend for his life against this shady politician who's intent on changing the past to control the future. In Universal Pictures, Time Cop.
Doing, partner?
Ex-partner.
Let me go, Max. Like, I'm not hurting anybody.
Got to take you back.
In the year 2004, time travel is a reality.
You are charged with violations of TEC code 40.8, time travel with intent to alter the future.
And a crime.
It turns out going back in time is a pretty easy way to make money.
I think you got yourself a shipment of gold and you're taking to General Lee.
The genie is already out of the bottle. The technology is there.
Now, one man.
You ever hear the name Aaron McComb?
Is about to take the ultimate power trip.
He's gonna be president.
You don't need the press, you don't need endorsements, you don't even need the truth. You need money.
But to enforce the laws of time.
Are we still together in 10 years? Am I dead?
One man is determined to stop him.
I cannot go back to save her.
This scumbag is not going back to steal money.
Stay here, Walker. My future, you're dead.
I think you plan too far ahead.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Ron Silver.
Will you get him?
Mia Sara.
Now, there's a little behind-the-scenes stuff I can find. And I think we're going to, I don't know what Steve's got, but I've heard some of these rumors about Mr. Van Damme. I've seen some reports on him, and we'll talk a little bit about the asshole that the muscles from Brussels may exactly be. Now, this film is actually based on a Dark Horse comic of the same name, actually written by the movie's writer. It comes from Mark Verheiden and Mike Richardson. They also wrote a comic book based on this. And this is where that gets made from. Well, this is my favorite, one of my favorite things I found out. The virtual reality nude scene was originally supposed to be a nature documentary about beavers. However, the offsite film team got drunk on the evening of shooting and ended up in a strip bar. The next morning, they woke up and realized they'd missed the bus to the nature preserve and had to instead film one of the dancers they'd met in the club the night before. Fantastic. Well done. Well done, Time Cop team. Now, Van Damme's futuristic hairstyle was partially influenced by Wolverine from the X-Men comics. Max also wore Wolverine brand work boots on and off duty. Now, for those who don't know, both mullets in the film are actually hair extensions, which I was a little disappointed to find out. I actually thought his Hard Target hair made it into Time Cop. They filmed all the future scenes first, gave him a trim, put him back to modern day Van Damme, and that's where we moved from. But I was a little disappointed that those extensions weren't real, but impressed at how good they were hidden, because I thought he had the straight moulet in both these films. While riding in the sled, which will transport him into the future, Jean-Claude Van Damme does his best Michael Bay as he pulls out a stick of Black chewing gum, a Japanese brand. During 1994, Van Damme appeared in television commercials for the Black chewing gum in Japan. So he is a product placement son of a bitch. According to Steve Lambert, during shooting of the final action sequence at the end of the film, Van Damme had decided on changing the fight choreography at the last minute, but was shot down by Peter Hymas, enraging him so much that in his first take of hand-to-hand fighting with Lambert, he deliberately slugged him in the face, not pulling the punch. The strike was so strong, enough to draw blood, but Lambert refused medical attention until the scene was filmed, believing the real blood added to the sequence. Lambert confronted Van Damme before he continued filming the fight scene, asking if he had a problem. But Van Damme left it alone and walked away like the douchebag pussy I've heard him to be. However, he still probably kicked my teeth to the back of my ears with that roundhouse kick. So, as much as he might be a pussy, I'm going to have to get in close to get away from the roundhouses because they're kind of deadly.
I don't want to find out.
Now, this is our synergy between these films. This was the second film produced by Mr. Sam Raimi and Robert Tappert's Renaissance Pictures to star Jean-Claude Van Damme. Within a year of another, what was the other, you might ask? Oh, it was Hard Target with Chinese director Zhang Wu. So, these two had the same production teams attached to them. So let's get into it. Let's get into Time Cop. Let's dive into the Cop of Time. And,
I was just going to say, I kind of like Time Cop. Actually, Van Damme's hair, let's just address one thing. He looks a lot like Michael Douglas in Black Rain. Yeah?
He did a little bit. He did.
Yeah. But no, carry on.
So I have not seen, so I want to preface everything I'm about to say because it's going to be a fun look back. Now, I think this month and next month, we have another gentleman who may or may not be known for karate and films. I believe these two gentlemen made karate and films become a thing because of it. However, I think both Mr. Van Damme and Mr. Seagal, late 80s, early 90s, I think the studios thought they had their next Schwarzenegger and possibly Stallone.
Yeah.
However, these guys never rise. Like, if you go through their catalog, there's a couple. Like, their early films, you're like, okay, yeah, these are known as action things, but they have been B-movie stars literally overnight. Like, that's just who they are now.
Yeah.
So, that being said, I know that back in these times, it was, for Van Damme, it's Bloodsport. Bloodsport, when that came out, you were like, what the fuck is this? And you wanted more of Van Damme at the time. At the time, yeah. That's what I'm saying, at the time. Clearly, we didn't want much more of him because he got shelved quickly. He went straight to VOD, like, in overnight. Yeah. Now, this was at a time when this is right at that peak of, like, where the 90s, it's like the music of the 80s and the movies of the 80s and the music of the 90s and the movies of the 90s. They start to, early, there's the slow shift. By mid, those are gone. Like, hair metal is gone, doesn't make the airwaves anymore. Grunge has overtaken it. The action movies of the 90s disappear, and now we've got the gritty movies and the explosion of the independent scene in the 90s, which now takes over the film. So we're at that meeting point, that nexus point, where they're still getting popular. People are going to see these films still. Yeah. It changes quickly. So Van Damme is one of those guys who we all went to see because, you know, you wanted to see these movies, and slowly but surely you started to realize, and I think even what happened to Schwarzenegger at the end of the 80s into the 90s, is we started to realize we were tired of that style of movie. Like it had played itself out. Like, there's only so much you can do.
At a short attention, at a short span of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much shorter span.
Popularity. Like,
especially for these guys. Because, you know, Schwarzenegger and Stallone were able to resurrect their career throughout because they had staying power. Jean-Claude...
They had money.
That too.
I would say, not really to push back, because I agree what you're saying, really, but I think Van Damme, even in, I mean, Bloodsport, I like, but in a purely nostalgic sense. Mm-hmm. But even when I watch Bloodsport now, I watch it very recently, he's got a lot of charisma, you know, and especially with him and Schwarzenegger, because obviously a lot of people talk about how they can't act, but what it actually is, it's the emphasis on syllables. It's not that they can't act, it's that it's the emphasis on the syllables of their words is misplaced. Mm-hmm. And the emphasis is just wrong. So it always sounds a little bit stilted. But I think I will give Van Damme far more props acting-wise than even Seagal.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But no, but not to say there's a couple of Seagal movies I like, though. I'm not being like, but I think, like, in Time Cop, I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, it's an intriguing film. Like,
he's got the presence, and you kind of warm to the guy. That's one thing I will give him. Like, so I'll give him props for.
He doesn't come out. We don't start off with him being Johnny Badass, as we will get to in another film. He actually gets his ass whooped when we start in the presence time after he has a pretty decent sex scene with that hot female cast member there. There's one thing he definitely gets about movies. Yeah, he gets hot female cast members to be his ladies of love or whatever. But yeah, he gets his ass whooped early in the film. And obviously it jumps ahead in time by about 10 years. And
it does go a bit all over the place. That's a bit
It does, yes.
It's overly complicated. But then I think if that's, you know, that's not really an issue with the movie. If you're looking at the movie like that, then you're watching the wrong movie.
I think what helps this film is, again, I think what I'll have my discussion being for both of these films is what I kind of also talked about when we talked about Schwarzenegger. What makes one film superior, and by superior, I mean its flaws not as glaring, is the cast. And in this film, Ron Silver and his boss, Jean-Claude does what Jean-Claude needs to do, kind of like what Schwarzenegger did in Red Heat. He played his cop character the way he needed to play him. And we really relied on like James Belushi and everyone else to kind of carry us through the film, a little bit here in Time Cop. Like, yeah, he says a few things, but we give him that black woman there to go back in time with him the one time. And Ron Silver's always on the periphery as being the villain. We go to him a lot, and he's actually a pretty delicious villain for the time. And then his the guy who gets blown up because he was banging Bruce's wife in The Last Boy Scout, he plays his time enforcement commission police chief or whatever. So those people, I think, help the film because it's not just Jean-Claude having to do all the talking and all the acting. And both films have something that I forgot how much I liked and now miss in movies, and that's the sad saxophone music. I forgot how much saxophone music there used to be in the 80s, 90s when we have movies like this. Like, nothing says that you're a depressed man than sad saxophone music, a bottle of alcohol, and looking at a videotape of the past. Nothing sells it to the audience that you're serious but also have emotions as a man than that music with an alcohol and watching a videotape that you now know by heart. I fucking absolutely was warmed with nostalgic joy when that scene came on, as dumb and ridiculous as it is. I was like, oh my God, this is like my childhood being played out all over again with his music.
Yeah, Ron Silver for me.
No, he didn't do it for you? As a creepy fucking villain?
No, I think he was a bit flat, actually, but...
Really?
He's Donald Trump, isn't he?
Oh, I thought he was... He was like, it was like a combination of Donald Trump and Hans Gruber. Like, I felt like they were really trying to tie into Hans Gruber for sure.
I was hanging up, that was my next thing. But, well, no, he says all the things that Trump has said about, like, you know, it's not about politics. It's about.
Oh my God. I put in here, I said, my thing was, this movie may not be one of the greatest movies ever made, but why is it predicted how America and its political state is 30 years later? Like, it literally is America. Right? Like, if there's anything that's lasting about Time Cop, it will be that it may have predicted the American future 30 years prior.
No, Ron Silver, but this isn't really about Ron Silver in this film necessarily, but he's always been someone, when he does crop up in things, I'm always a little bit like, why are you in movies? But really? Look, I'm not really going there. Like, you know, this is hard. This is Time Cop. I enjoy it. I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
I have not
time.
Seen it probably but since I remembered, the 90s.
Yeah, I remembered when I saw it initially that I kind of thought, oh, Van Damme, you know, you know, he's on an upward trajectory. You know, things are getting good for him. Because, you know, like the Bloodsport, Death Warrant, Lionheart, all them films, they were canon movies. That canon company, meaning the canon company, not. You know, they were below B pictures for me to an extent. Apart from Bloodsport, but they kind of milked that when the budgets got cheaper and they just paid him more, basically. But you know, in the 90s, he was on a roll, and then he fucked himself because he's a prick.
He is a prick, yes. From what I've learned, he's always kicking people intentionally. Like, it literally, he makes it feel like it.
Seagal's known for that. But I will say this, the difference between Seagal and Van Damme is Van Damme admitted it and tried to make up for it, at least. So I'll give him that. But yeah, it's overly complicated. It's silly. But, you know, this is a B picture. Mm-hmm. But it's got its merits. You know,
it does.
It's a good watch. It's a good watch, I think. I mean,
I think just for the fact of what it has, without knowing, it predicted.
I think he's
like,
pretty good in it. I think
even,
he's good.
Oh, I do too. Even the little moment I talked about where they had to film the naked girl, it literally is predicting VR porn. Like, what's happening. Like, so many things that have come to light in 30 years. This movie kind of had its finger on the pulse of way back then, which is probably the most amusing part of the, or you know, the most memorable part of the film, is you look back and go, holy shit. You know, you're kind of like, holy cow, like a lot of this stuff has come true. Thank God the car design hasn't, though.
That did make me laugh a bit. That was like an Oldsmobile with like cardboard cut out.
They were like, how do we make this look like the future? Like, let's just put a lot of edges on it, build it up.
Yeah, get an Oldsmobile, get some cardboard, cover it up.
It did predict driving cars. I mean, this movie has predicted like 50 things that have happened in America and the world since.
50 movies did it before that, but let's let that slide.
Listen, VR porn, bingo, bongo, boom, time cop. Now, I did write down, how many roundhouse slash splits do you think Van Damme has in his contract that must be in a film? Because the one thing I remember from this movie, the only thing I always remembered, is the moment in his kitchen where he does the split to not get electrocuted. Everything else about this movie I couldn't have told you shit about. But if you said, what's the one thing I remember? I said, I do believe in this film, Jean-Claude avoids being electrocuted by doing a split on his kitchen counter. And another guy gets electrocuted. And that's what I remembered. And sure enough, when it happened, it's the Rick Dalton. Here it comes. There we go.
That's it's a Van Damme signature move, you know?
I really do feel that he and Seagal made it that everyone now in these films that would come on for a while, most and a lot of movies now in action, everyone knows Kung Fu. It's astounding how many people in the criminal world know Kung Fu. Like, even in John Wick, everyone who is an assassin in that world, whether they're the top-level assassin or a bottom-level bagman henchman, everyone is well-versed in Kung Fu some form.
But, you know, I'll always give that a pass because that's just more fun to watch.
I agree, but I think Jean-Claude and Steven Seagal changed that, though.
Yeah.
Think about it, because it's just a lot of punching in our Stallone and Schwarzenegger, because they don't have the leg ability because they have too much steroids in them and their legs are too big. They're not doing roundhouse kicks.
No, that's just, you know, that's like a thing where I'm like, well, that's just more fun and pleasurable to watch than just a big bunch of fucking dickheads swinging at each other, basically. So I'm always up for that. I don't mind that.
How fun was it that he does, like, the kid who steals something on the skateboard or whatever, the roller skates, and he just stands there with a fucking kick to stop?
Well, you know. People love that shit, though. That's why he's Van Damme.
No, I understand. But you know, I'm saying, 30 years later, you look back and go, that would never fly. Can you imagine if John Wick did that?
But we've changed. We've changed. The film 100%. Hasn't, you know. That's why we rewatch films, because we've changed. The film hasn't, but, you know.
Yeah, I was even telling my wife when I was watching it, there was some nostalgia because, you know, the malls, ever since, you know, malls have been declining quite a bit now when you got online shopping. But it was interesting to watch this be filmed in a mall and how malls used to be, like, packed. You know, just where everyone went. And now it's, like, not so much.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, it was a throwback of nostalgia to those days of being, like, the mall culture of the Gen X generation. Oh, my God. Like, Mall Rats from fucking Kevin Smith. I mean, that's a movie that speaks to me. Like, it's like, holy shit, that's the American experience
in your
teenage years. And so there's a lot of nostalgia in this film.
Historically relevant.
Exactly. Now, there are plot holes. There are more plot holes than...
Plot. There's more plot holes than plot.
But, yeah. Which is okay, because...
If you're going to sit there with a pen and paper...
It doesn't even attempt to be like pretending it's trying to be some authority on time travel. Like, it just doesn't even
fucking
care.
I don't give a shit about that anyway, do you? Bog me down. Don't bog me down with that crap, because I'm trying to have a good time.
I was hoping he was going to end up banging his wife, him from the future banging his wife, and then have him present. Like, how do you feel if, like, you know, you walk in on your girl?
Well, you want, like, a spit roast.
I wanted, like, a little bit of, like, how's he feel about, like, is she cheating on him? Because it's him, but it's him from the future.
Oh, no, they're both banging her at the same time.
No, I do not want.
Sorry, guys.
I do not want your bird stuffing thing that you guys do over there for the
holiday. I'm Sarah from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I've always wanted to see her in more movies. And, you know, if I would have got spit roast, that would have made up for decades.
It was a decent film. I did not hate it. It's an enjoyable slog through. I think it runs.
Hour and 40.
It's not a long run at all.
But all films were an hour and 40 back then.
Yeah,
you know,
not bad.
They were getting bums on seats, you know, the more view. Yeah.
100 minutes was like the standard for an action movie, and 90 minutes was the standard for a rom-com.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're going to do an epic, big epic story drama, then 2 hours and everything could go, or
2 hours and change over here.
If you want to waste people's time 2.5 hours, then you do that. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, all in all, this movie was a decent watch, and I enjoyed it, but I had not seen it in 30 fucking years.
Probably the same for me. Probably the same for me.
Did it hold up for you? So obviously it's changed. Where it was in your mind, the place it held in your mind, did it still have that same... Because as I said on the Schwarzenegger one, I didn't feel like Running Man in my head was better than it was when I remembered it. So obviously we've grown.
Look, I was going to say this till the end, but really, just to sort of sprinkle a few things in. Look, when I'm watching a Van Damme movie, I'm in Van Damme mode, all right?
Yes, yes. You have to have your mind in that movie.
Just like we said before about other, you know, it's like, look, Time Cop versus, you know, fucking...
Back to the Future.
Yeah, you know, look, you're watching a Van Damme movie, you want asses kicked, you want some explosions, you want some fun.
And he's going to get some sex in there for
and
you.
And he's easy to watch. He's pretty good, I think. He gets a bad rap. I mean, he deserves the bad rap of him being a prick. But mm-hmm. he's got screen presence and he's likable. Mm-hmm. And I think he's great in this. So did it hold up for me? Yeah. In a way. I think, like, I had a good time. I mean, look, with both of these movies, I had a good time for what they are. And I think this and Hard Target, but we'll go into Hard Target. I don't really mm-hmm. want to talk about Hard Target. But he was in a good place then. He was in a good place.
Oh yeah, he was in his wheelhouse at the time.
Yeah, yeah. So and like and as you said earlier, Sudden Death, Nowhere to Run. They're pretty good too. So he was in a good place, as was Seagal. As was everyone probably at that point.
Yeah, there was their end of their halcyon days. It was. So last hurrah.
Beginning of the end, but they went for it. Yeah, you're right. So no, it did kind of hold up for me. I mean, you know, people who run down special effects get on my tits, but you know, come on, look, you know, this was
1994.
I
mean, I know the combination of the two of them being melded together didn't hold up, but it was 94. Like some of that's better than some of the stuff we've seen today, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's like dissing Jason and the Argonauts because the skeletons are obviously plasticine. That's like, yeah, but at this time, appreciate it in the context of his time. Yeah, it's fucking
like
clever
the thing.
As fuck.
Like the things, practical effects are amazing.
The exception, I would say, because the effects still are better than anything.
No, I agree.
But no, I think the effects in this, which there are effects, there's some pretty decent.
Yeah, there has to be. Yeah, they have quite a few.
They're good enough. You know,
I realize where they got them from. They got them from Terminator 2. They used some of the effects in Terminator 2.
I saw a bit of Total Recall
to add in like the where they would be sucked back through time. You know, what I mean?
Yeah,
that fall. Yeah,
no,
there was some
right,
of the.
You're right.
You could feel the Terminator 2.
So not a bad attempt. I'm not going to talk it up too much. I did enjoy it. I had a good time. Like I keep saying, I had a good time. But what I mean is, really, for a film from then with him in it, you know, it's a film that's only just, you know, like same with Hard Target. They're films that only just squeezed into being theatrical releases.
Yeah.
They're only just theatrical releases, you know. So I think it does hold up. I think it's pretty good. Good fun. A good fun movie.
All right. Well, now we're going to go on to our second film from 1993 that came out prior to Time Cop. It's Mr. John Woo's Hard Target.
It's time for the tale of the tape. Hard Target was written by Chuck Ferrer, directed by John Woo, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, Lance Henriksen, Yancey Butler, Wilford Brimley, Arnold Vosloo, Casey Lemons, and Sven Thornton. Made on a budget of $20 million and grossing $74.2 million at the box office. It holds a 6.2 rating on IMDb and a 60 critics and 49 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. On Letterboxd, Steve gives it 3.5 stars, while Scott gives it 1 star. A woman hires a drifter as her guide through New Orleans in search of her missing father. In the process, they discover a deadly game of cat and mouse behind his disappearance in Universal Pictures' Hard Target.
In the city of New Orleans, in a darker side of Dixie, away from the music and the lights, there's a new game in town.
You'll be provided with a guide, trackers, and the weapons of your choice.
I need to file a missing person report.
The competitors are deadly.
We pride ourselves in hunting only combat veterans, men who have the necessary skills to make our hunts more interesting.
And they always win.
You want to find your father? Get somebody who knows the city to show you around.
Now, the opposition is about to get one last chance.
What kind of a name is Chance?
My mama took one.
My friend, Mr. Boudreaux. Silver Star, Marine Forced Recon. He's obviously not someone we should underestimate. He is an annoying little insect. Now I'm stepped on hard.
We need to get out of here now.
Ladies first.
What?
These men will chase after you. You mad at you for business or pleasure?
Both. Look at it this way. You're gonna get to meet Elvis.
Give it a rest, pal.
Jean-Claude Van Damme is the Hard Target.
You miss me?
From internationally acclaimed action director John Woo.
to be hunted.
You tell me.
Hard Target.
Mr. Smith, what do you have for us from behind the scenes? A little lowdown on what happened on the set of Hard Target. Were people hard and was there a target on them?
I'm hard right now over here.
This movie was three seconds away from being a porno. And they said, well, let's make it an action film.
Right, so yeah, Hard Target from 1993. I've got some quotes here and things. You know, this is John Woo's first American movie. So, but first, Janet Marlin of the New York Times said this, swishing, whooshing, lovingly photographed weaponry, nasty gurgles from the wounded, the clonking sound of a head hit in raw iron, a bullet in the eye. These are the cornerstones of Hard Target, one of the summer's few super bloodthirsty action films and the one that actually stands a chance of rising above its genre. I've got a quote from Mr. Tarantino himself.
QT.
Quentin Tarantino, in a meeting with a studio executive discussing the film Hard Target, the executive mocked John Woo by saying, oh, he can direct an action movie for sure, claiming that the film was over the top. Tarantino, incensed by this, scoffed at the executive. Yeah, he can shoot an action scene and Michelangelo can paint a ceiling. Tarantino later claimed that John Woo was the first director since Sergio Leone to show film lovers what they'd seen before, but with new eyes. As you pointed out earlier, Universal were worried about having an Asian director on set who had limited command of the English language on a large-scale project, so they hired American director Sam Raimi to oversee the film's production and to have him on standby if Wu was not able to fulfill his role as director. Raimi was very excited to work with Wu, as he was a fan of his Hong Kong films. Raimi also was also confident in Wu's directional skills, stating that Wu at 70% is still going to blow away most American directors working at 100%. John Woo said of Sam Raimi. Now, this also will go into the fucking ego of Van Damme. John Woo on Sam Raimi. I was very impressed with him. I liked his work, and I found he had a big passion for film. He gave me a lot of respect and support in many ways. While I was cutting the film with Bob Murawski, Van Damme and the studio wanted to do their own cut of the film. I was very upset, and so was Sam. So he arranged a big meeting with the studio. He was so mad. He was yelling and screaming at everyone. He said, this is a John Woo movie. We should let Mr. Woo make his own work, and no one should touch the film. As Woo had not mastered the English language yet, it took time for the cast and crew to get used to working with him. When Woo could not explain what he wanted with a shot to cinematographer Russell Carpenter, he would resort to simple statements such as, this will be the Sam Peckinpah shot, to get his message across to Carpenter. The weapon fire on the set was considered dangerous. Alec Baldwin, take note. This led to the crew building a new bulletproof plexiglass shield that could be bolted to the camera. These camera dollies were nicknamed by the crew as the Woo Woo Choo Choo. Now, Woo was contractually obligated to release an R rating by Universal Pictures. And when submitting the film to the MPAA, it was judged as too violent and intense for an R rating and received the dreaded NC-17 rating. Woo re-edited the film 6 times for the MPAA, as they never indicated what specific scenes they found objectionable.
MPAA can fuck itself.
Yeah, go fuck your mother. The MPAA accepted the film after Woo had made 20 cuts to the film.
Jesus Christ.
Apparently, there is a bootleg copy that people, you know, the eagle-eyed and the more nerdy can find online. But yeah, so we're back in the realms of first-time director, fish out of water, basically fucked around by the studio and basically being restrained from doing their stuff at the same time. And Woo also claimed that if he killed 3 people in one scene, he could only kill 1 person in the next, and so on and so forth. So, you know, a troubled production, as I mean, I think ultimately all films trouble.
Especially depending, as we've learned, depending on who the director is. Who do they allow to have carte blanche, and who do they fuck around with? The Last Boy Scout, fucking Joe Silver, probably ruined that film.
Yeah. Well, you
and
know,
it seems like that this Hard Target could have been better than even I look into my problems with, but now it sounds like some of those problems have a lot to do with the fact that you hired a man because of his track record from Hong Kong films, but then you don't want him to do what he does best.
Yeah, so...
That's insanity. Then why'd you fucking hire him?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
Michelangelo,
exactly.
I know you can paint the ceiling, but all I need you to do is some trim work in the bathroom if you don't mind. Just do it the fucking edges, please.
What so a lot, you know, like a lot of directors from like Sam Raimi, Tarantino, Martin Scorsese, they all love John Woo. And they've, you know, been said for years. In my opinion, which is probably controversial, I think this is his best American movie.
Really?
And his best American movie, that's...
We're not saying this best movie. Yeah.
Hard Boiled.
It's amazing.
And The Killer.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 masterpieces. Action, just ecstasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Hard Target is John Woo's best American film. And I also think Hard Target is Van Damme's best American, well, best film, basically. Mm. I think so. I mean, it's, you know, subjective,
yes,
obviously. But it's, you know, it's a remake of The Most Dangerous Game from the 30s.
Yes.
As you've stated, Sam Raimi and Robert Tappert were involved, and and clearly, thank fuck, they were. Because John Woo could have been replaced, he could have got his ass handed to him, they could have just took it, the studio could have just taken the film away from him, and it would have probably been shoved away as a bargain basement video back then.
Yeah,
You've got a great sort of bluegrass music score, whereas you've got the saxophone, we get
the There was a few saxophone moments in the beginning.
Relax.
It's my first saxophone song.
Yeah, it's not a very good one.
Hey.
But anyway, listen.
Listen, it's not Kenny G. What are you going to do?
that's real blue. That's real jazz. This is just a rumor, but... $5 million of that budget may or may not have gone towards Van Damme's Jerry Curl juice. But
my note is, so Coming to America's got Soul Glow for the Jerry Curls. I'm hoping JCVD's got like a mullet moist, like a little. That was the wettest Jerry Curl you will, or the wettest mullet you will ever see.
That's hot as fuck in Louisiana.
No, I'm not disagreeing. The fact that.
Imagine if you were in Louisiana.
Well,
imagine,
the meticulousness.
If you were in Louisiana, your head would look like fucking Niagara Falls.
Probably. What I'm saying is the meticulousness for them to continually make it, like, it was always wet. There was not a scene. Like, other things may have got missed in the film, but the one thing that was always continuity correct was that fucking mullet was wet all. I'm sorry. Moist all the
time.
Yeah.
Oh, you like
all
moist. That's your favorite word. We know, but that's a whole nother story.
Moist mullet.
Yeah. That's on your own. That's part of your OnlyFans thing. We don't go there. But anyway.
Yeah.
Wilford Brimley. You've got Lance Henriksen.
You do have Wilford Brimley. You do have him.
Well, Lance Henriksen is awesome in everything. Anyway.
He's a great
Arnold
villain.
Arnold Vosloo from The Mummy. You know, you've got some great villains.
You've got a lot of weaponry.
You've got some of the best action sequences. Let's just fucking face it. There's some awesome action in it.
Well, that's what I want to say. So of this film, where it fails, and I think this is a loss in translation moment. This is, as you're saying in our notes, John Woo doesn't have command of the English language. I don't have command of the Chinese language, so we're on the same grounds, him and I. I couldn't direct a movie in Hong Kong because I couldn't speak Cantonese.
You couldn't direct a movie in English, motherfucker.
Listen,
let's
cocksucker.
Be honest,
look. I directed your mom. And, sorry,
your mother's an animal.
Your mother was the star.
Hey.
Talk about a spit roast.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm just kidding. Anyways,
yeah.
I think the fails of this movie,
but that doesn't.
Where I found this movie to be tiresome and sometimes a pain to get through. Now, listen. Is the acting. And I think some of that is because of we don't have, as you're saying, there's not the ability for him to convey to his actors what he wants out. So it gets very melodramatic, like Asian films. Hold on. You had your moment.
No, because you're wrong.
Nope, I'm right. People are going to watch this and they're going to be like, ugh. But,
no,
but what
not.
You are 100%
action,
right
action
in.
Action
and what made me excited about it, which is I was like, now that I hear that they've cut a lot, this movie could have definitely been better. Now, what I loved about Van Damme, about the acting with Van Damme, is he doesn't say a lot. He does play like that lonely drifter. Like it feels like he feels like an action hero in this. Like he feels like he's doing his best version of like a Clint Eastwood meets Snake Plissken. You know what I mean? Like he's very like mysterious. But when action happens, he's kicking ass left and right. And I love that about him. I like that a lot because that was the best parts. And Woo's action stuff, when they're in the warehouse, it's everything that you know except for the fucking doves. But other than that, only a few of them. Actually, they're pigeons here. They were pigeons. There was one dove and there was a couple of pigeons. But he couldn't get enough doves in Louisiana. It's
racist.
Like,
bird racist.
Bird racist. Fuck them doves. And
you
love those doves in Mission Impossible. Do you
fucking love pigeons those? Coming over here taking our seed.
Taking our fucking jobs. But the like, hands down, what made this movie worth the watch was when we got the action. Everything else,
you could say the storyline
is kind of the female actress is Hendrickson, okay. I always feel is angry all the time. Just like he wakes up with like a hemorrhoid.
He's great.
No, he's good, but I'm saying like he's like angry the entire time. Like,
yeah, well, he's
like
a psychopath.
Even while he's playing the piano, he's angry. Yeah. It's just like this dude's angry at breakfast.
Exactly. Go, this is B movie.
And I did enjoy his sidekick, and I enjoyed how we killed him off. Like some movies overdo it. I love the double slide shooting up to. I mean, these are all the things that we love about John Woo.
Apparently, no one has that. And from my research, no one has a nice word to say about Van Damme.
Oh, he's a dick. Yeah.
Well, John Woo did. John Woo had some nice things.
Because he didn't understand English or whatever, or German, whatever, or French.
English.
He does
English.
Now, but I'm saying, like, he's trying to understand Van Damme's broken English.
I've seen, yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're both.
But did you notice, not the same, not as bad, but the Arnold grunt. You know what I'm talking about. There's a little bit of it in there. Not as bad.
I think you're wrong. I don't agree. I don't agree.
That's fine.
Arnie's
you can
the
be
worst
wrong.
At that. Arnie's.
Oh, I'm not saying that Jean-Claude.
I may have been wrong once.
He's in the same stress.
I may have been wrong once, but I might be mistaken.
He's amateur. Jean-Claude is amateur. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the professional first ballot Hall of Fame of bad moans and grunts.
I know that. No, I'm the one. That's what I'm saying.
I'm just saying, there was a couple times I was like, "Oh, that did sound a little bit like a little Arnold grunting there."
Yeah, I was watching that. I was actually watching the film, bullshit. So that's a bit.
Look,
of a difference.
I got to watch when
You've
we were
never
doing.
Seen a film in your life.
Your mom hasn't seen a lot of films.
Your mother
doesn't have eyeballs. But when we did A Better Tomorrow 2, the majority of that film is garbage, as my guest
agreed.
But the ending sequence. Is why you watch that film. Like the rest of it is kind of like, and I think sometimes some of John Woo's issues are, and I get it, that Asian cinema is different than how we do things in America. I know that 100%. Like, I'm not pretending.
That's where it ends then.
But what I'm saying is there's.
That's not made for
you. It's the old dramatic, like the over dramatized. But what if you're making an American movie?
It is to you. But
what I'm saying, but when you bring that here to do Hard Target and even some of his further films, like. Mission Impossible 2. They're overly melodramatic, which is not a thing that Americans are used to. So, again, I understand these Hong Kong movies are not made for me, and I get that. However, when they're made, if you didn't know, he's Asian English. I don't know, is that a thing? You're Asian English? Is that a thing?
I'm Asian on the inside over here.
I'm not going to straight fall off the track. We're not going to get on the woo-woo choo-choo, right? We're not going to get on the woo-woo choo-choo. But for me, the action was spectacular. Like, that was what kept me in the movie. Some of the other stuff was just, like, the female actress, she was terrible. Some of the acting in this is bad.
Stop being a misogynist. The one woman in the movie got Brimley, shit all over. He's all right.
In the white boots.
Are we talking about fucking Oscar movies now? This is a B movie. He does a fine job.
My thought was, when I saw him, I was like, well, how did he get cast? Like, that was my question in my mind. I was like, Wilford Brimley is somewhat of a well-respected actor.
25 years?
Probably. Well, he recently, probably in this time frame, he had done the Tom Cruise movie, the lawyer movie. Remember when John Grisham movies came out? Like, Father was like The Firm. So he was in The Firm, and he was probably in Cocoon 2. And he was doing that TV show here in America. But the same, and Diabetes. He was doing his Diabetes commercials.
Diabetes.
But when he comes on screen, I was like, oh, okay. Because I remember seeing the names and the titles, and it's like the John Cusack moment from our movies. I was like, oh, that's right. I forgot Wilford Brimley's in this film. And then he starts speaking that really broken Creole. I was just like, whatever.
I was like, okay.
No, I don't know. I don't know why he's here. Then he rides off with the girl. They ride back. Whatever.
Pettiness now.
It's not petty. But it's just my listen.
Yeah,
you get to talk.
Is always
you get to
a
take
bit.
A shit on people. I get to take a shit on your stuff too.
I'm
I didn't hate the film.
Shit on anyone. I'm not taking a shit on anyone.
The things I like about John Woo and don't like about John Woo rise up in this film as well. It's overly dramatic. Doesn't need to be. There's very poor acting in it. But again, I think it's. I think it's the loss in translation. I really do. I think it's just loss in translation. It's an inability for him to probably convey what he wants. And so some of it's wooden, some of it's like...
It's not conveying what he wants, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah. And then also you're telling me about the everything gets cut. So there's probably we're probably missing way more amazing action sequences than just the ending got us. Because I will say this, folks, the ending sequence was spectacular.
I think there's 10 minutes missing.
And if it's MPA reasons, we're missing 10 good minutes of violence. Now, the
car shooting in
the beginning or in that one, that was a little dramatic, but the ending, I'm gonna say this right now, we're early. Leaving the Santa Claus movies out of it because those are just different animals themselves. Because it's not fair to compare because I actually think they had the better action sequences. But of the movies we've watched so far, maybe the best overall action sequence is that warehouse where they store the old Mardi Gras float end thing. That was fucking spectacular.
And
that
also,
Woo being the woo woo choo choo. I was on it and I was excited. I was worth whatever I watched to get to that point.
Not necessarily speaking of an action sequence at all, but the stunt work was great too, I think.
And, oh, absolutely.
The motorbike bit was great too.
When he kicks him off?
Yeah, that was all.
Physically, he would have broke his foot and killed the man, but it was a great. And I saw it coming. It was telegraphed, but I was like.
When he's sitting on top of the bike, but that's all totally great.
It's everything you want, and Van Damme did it beautifully. And what I loved about it is they didn't throw in a stupid fucking catch line afterwards.
That's true, because
if Schwarzenegger, in Predator, one of my favorite movies of all time, when he throws the fucking knife and gets the guy, he goes, stick around. Like, we had to have a line. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what? If I was to do my own edit of Predator, not to go too far, I would take away all Arnie's quips and you would have a much better movie. Not that it could be much better because it's a pretty fucking great movie.
Yes.
But I've always thought that. But I would take them quips out because that kind of demeans the film a little bit.
I know what you mean.
Because
people then focus on the quips and not the actual what's going on.
No, I've always thought that.
And John Woo didn't do that for us.
I don't necessarily cringe much, but it's always a little bit disappointing that the reminder of it is like, oh, yeah. You know, because it's so deadly serious, isn't it?
Well, because the quip is dumb because some of, like, the get to the chopper is not meant to be a quip. It's a moment he's, like, telling them to run and, like, I don't got time to bleed. Those are cool moments that weren't.
No, yeah.
Yeah, but the stick around is an intentional.
But I think, I can't remember, is there a couple of quips in Time Cop? Not really.
Jean-Claude's got many quips that we can remember because he's not good really at.
He probably didn't want to do that though because he's an egotistical prick. He didn't want to be considered like Arnie.
Well, I can appreciate that. Yeah, I can appreciate that he's trying to move past that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all in all,
the action sequences are spectacular. Yeah. And as I was saying, I think this may be our best overall action sequence the movie since the Christmas movie.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I do like the set and like the Louisiana set and for a change. And like you say, no, you're absolutely right as well. Like with Van Damme, he's clearly channeling kind of like Clint Eastwood.
He is. He's a gunslinger, a Ronin. Like he has got the whole vibe working for
him.
But
he always has, not just in this film, he always, not a naivety, but there's a softness to him. Do you know what I mean? He's not kind of chewing tobacco or being a badass in that way. You know, he's always got that kind of softness to him that kind of warms you to the character, even if he is kind of going to fucking kick ass and take names.
And he's all out of names.
Oh!
All right, well, let's move into our showdown. And this one for me is... It's a toss-up. I'm going to be honest with you.
Let's go to the card.
These two go neck and neck, and I think each film shines for each different thing.
Agreed.
But the first thing we're talking about is the best action sequence.
Best action sequences.
If you didn't understand what I just said maybe 5 minutes ago, for me, the best action sequences in this film, and maybe all of the films we've watched since we started 2024, because we started this little journey of our new direction back at the Christmas time, is Hard Target. And if you watch nothing of this film and you just go to the end, you will be enthralled. And you will see where a lot of our modern day action sequences have come from John Woo and some of the people. Like, it was funny watching this, I realized that even the table segment of Die Hard, while not as frenetic as what John Woo does, definitely is paying a little bit of nodding its cap. Mr. McTiernan is nodding his cap towards John Woo and what he likes to do. And the bullet ballet is unreal. It's a fucking fun 20 minutes, it feels like the end. It was great. It was, I mean, it was just action fucking packed. It was spectacular. Yeah. There's some bizarre things, like he rides the swan down, but it's such a 90s movie. You're just in it. You're just in it, and I fucking loved that act sequence. Mr. Smith, I think I know your answer. I think we're lockstep on this one, but your best action sequence. Again, it's not the actual sequence. It's what movie had the better action sequences.
Right, so I will say this. For me, Hard Target, I'm a huge John Woo fan anyway, but biases aside, I think the whole... When he shows up at the beginning and rescues Yancey
Butler.
The kid
of the fight, yeah. That's
and
fun.
And kicks everyone's ass there. That's hardcore stuff. It fucking means business, yeah? Then you've got the motorcycle bit. It's just a showstopper of an action scene. And like you say, absolutely, the last... The final, what feels like half an hour, but probably isn't, is just John Woo pulling out his bag of tricks, basically, and doing it with absolute precision.
Yes.
I will say, though, I think the final quarter of an hour, 15 minutes of Time Cop, there's no slouch, though.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I think Time Cop has got good action.
Yeah,
but,
no, it has
but
got
in
some
comparison.
Good action. Yeah, I'm not.
How about
being,
this? If it outdid John Woo,
have. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be all your movie's got shit.
No.
Mine's got good.
Look, I agree with
you. I think they both got good action sequences.
Oh, agreed.
Best supporting characters.
That'll bring us to Best Supporting Characters, where I feel Time Cop is actually the stronger of the performances now, based on the fact that they were more believable actors. As I talked about in Hard Target, it's some wooden performances. Yes, some people are chewing the fat to do things, but it all feels very all over the place. In this one, I think Van Damme says a lot more in this movie. He's, as you said, he's a little, as we go through the movie, he goes from being kind of like this wet behind the ears cop to suddenly become like a hardened, grizzled person because of the events of the film. And so I think he does a great job with that. I really liked Silver as the bad guy, and all the other cast that come in and out that actually kind of help him move along to the story gives him a crutch, something to lean on. He's got some people to act with him who help him. And he's, you know, because he's not the loner in this. He's not just this drifter, you know, who's here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And he's all out of chewing ass. He's going to kick some bubblegum. So for me, the best supporting characters of a film go to Time Cop, in my opinion.
For me, I've always found Ron Silver to be a bit of a wet blanket. Sorry, that's too harsh. Just a bit middle of the road. I'm going to pick Hard Target because I love Lance Henriksen. My reason for picking Hard Target is because you're dealing with a gang of psychopaths who hunt human beings for fun and cash. So they are going to be unhinged maniacs, and that's what we get in this. Okay, I'll extend the olive branch of San Yancey Butler's not great, but this is not a big budget movie. They probably couldn't afford someone more well known at the time. This was a gamble anyway, this film, you know. This was a gamble on Van Damme, and this was a gamble on John Woo. So you're not going to get Michelle Pfeiffer as the fucking female character in something like this. They're going to find a lady who's easy on the eyes and can convincingly kind of portray a damsel. But you've got Arnold Vosloo, who's a real imposing, menacing figure. You've got Lance Henriksen, who is literally got a knife and fork in every scene to fucking help him do down the scenery and just go all out. So for me, I mean, I think because Van Damme is the strong, silent type pretty much in Hard Target, you needed that other element of insanity for these psychopathic characters. So for me, I'm going to have to say Hard Target has got the best characters.
Funniest moments.
Funniest moments. Jesus, this was a toss-up because there's not a lot of humor in either, but I think there's more humor played for in Time Cop than in Hard Target. Because as you said, it's pretty much everyone just trying to kill each other in Hard Target. And there's not a lot of humor. And the only thing that's funny is the ridiculous Creole voice, but that's not intentional. So that can't be given. That was, I was sitting here going, I don't know. I was like, I guess time cop, because there is a few. And by humor, oof, I mean, we're talking minimal at both. There's not a lot of funny moments, but there's more funny moments because of the clips from the American actors in Time Cop, where in the other one, they're just unhinged trying to kill each other. And if it's funny, it's not intentional. So I went with funniest moments as being what was played for laughs as opposed to people laughing at it because of ridiculousness. If we're going by that, then it's Our Target. But if we're going by actual funny moments, I go with Time Cop. But both, I mean, neither, you're not going to walk away from these and going, that was just like another 48 hours. You're not going to have that reaction for either film. So, if there's one thing Jean-Claude will not be known for, it'll be his humorous films that he's a part of. Yeah, exactly. What say you on this, Mr. Smith? You know
what? I'm going to take your word for it because I can't really.
Exactly. It's really like, I know they were intentionally trying to make some quips and be funny, but in Hard Target, they weren't. But they were going after one another. And Hard Target was like, I'm going to fucking kill you kind of thing. And yeah, if anything was funny, it's unintentional.
Honestly, I'm going to have to take your word for it because I think Time Cop is perhaps the lighter movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So a little lighter theme process.
So just naturally.
Even though it's a guy whose wife's been murdered.
Valid.
One's wife's been murdered, one's father's been murdered. Everyone's trying to get revenge.
Come and have some yucks, everybody.
It's a Disney family affair.
I'm sorry not to ramble. I'm just going to say Time Cop because I'm sure there were some moments with Ron Silver kind of being psychopathic politician.
Yeah, so. And he yells at himself in the future. He's talking some shit to himself.
And I did like the bit where he smashes a guy's face across the side of the car when they're sat inside.
Yes, and then later tells him to stop being a pussy. Forget every time because I smashed your face.
Actually, I think there's a point where the guy puts his head there just to be ready for him to do it again. Yeah. So that in itself, that's one more funny scene than Hard Target's got. So it has to win. Just by mathematics, it has to win.
Most original plot.
More original or better plot or whatever we want to call this part. I mean, it almost feels on the nose because it'd be Time Cop because it's dealing with different things where we're getting, I don't want to say standard, but it's the usual like getting revenge or taking down the man or someone's being hunted kind of thing. So we've had that before. Not that we haven't gone back in time, but the fact that I still love, and I think maybe, you know what makes it the funniest, Time Cop? Is that the plot is that we don't have a government agency. We're letting the Washington Police Department run this agency, stop time travel completely. And I forgot we talked about this, but the whole thing in the time is the only people who have it is the people who are the police. So the fact that the only people going back in time are the cops to go back in time. So it almost feels like they should have known that someone was doing nefarious work because the only one that has a working time machine should be the time police. Which makes it almost irrelevant to have them. So maybe I've talked myself out of most original plot, but I'm going to go with Time Cop because it was playing in a different field where Hard Target was, you know, it's another action standard kind of story. Not that it wasn't a good story, just, you know, if it's going to go original, yeah, you've seen this, whether in Westerns or many other films. And actually, it's a remake of a film that came out in the 30s. So, Smith, what say you?
Yeah, it's tricky, this one, but I'm going to choose Hard Target. Because although it's a remake, it's not a straight remake. And it's not like Van Damme's parents were killed and he's gone after them. He's a hired gun, you know? The Time Cop thing, there's a million time travel movies where someone has to go back to change history, and should they? So to me, I'm going to keep it short and just say that I think Hard Target is the better, for me, the better plot. And it's more streamlined and it gets to its point. That in itself, to me, makes it better.
Best Action Hero.
All right, that moves us on to Best Action Star. And while the star is the same person, I think Wilford Brimley in the white boots is our best. Now, I think the best Van Damme Action Star movie is his Hard Target character. I mean, he's just coming in as an action star. Like, that's exactly what this character is designed for, where they're trying to make it a little more complicated, as if it's a transition for our character in Time Cop, where in Hard Target, we start the movie, he's a badass. He's a badass throughout. There is no arc to his character. He starts off and he ends at the same spot. He's just had a little more body count. But I do want to mention he is a part of a seaman union. Just you take that home with you. He is a part of a seaman union, and it's on the side. So I didn't make it up. John Woo did. Lost in translation, maybe, but yes. But yes, our seaman union karate kicking man with the most moist mullet in the history of cinema. It's Jean-Claude Van Damme's character in Hard Target. It's a hard target to miss with that moist of a mullet.
I'll agree with you. But having said all this, I will only say it once more. Time Cop is no slouch. But for me, Van Damme is... I love Van Damme, and I love John Woo, and I love Hard Target. So Van Damme and Hard Target for me. Chance Boudreau.
The better movie.
All right, that brings us to our final selection of which we think was the better movie. They both have their merits, and they both have some strong missing pieces, in my opinion. However, for me, the best part of Hard Target was the end. So overall movie, when I got to the end, man, I was in love with it. I was hoping that the whole of the movie would have been what we got in the end. Like they would have allowed, which I think is what John Woo probably did, is they cut out 10 minutes that would have given us even more, which would have made this an even better action movie and probably would have been a fantastic. Like, maybe. We have to see those 10 minutes. This is true. But for me, the better movie, the one I actually was in, and I think it's because of its cast and I actually enjoyed it more, was Time Cop. Not because I picked it, but like I said, both of these movies are, they're neck and neck in a lot of ways. They really are. If you're looking for a story that's not just a great John Woo action sequence at the end, Time Cop's your movie. If you want to see just bullets and death, then you just watch Hard Target. But for me, the better overall movie, and by an extra lock of a mullet, it's Time Cop. Yeah. Like a quarter inch longer in his mullet. It's Time Cop. The mullets are fantastic. They are in of themselves deserve awards. So
I have mullet envy. All right.
that Hard Target mullet. I was like, if everyone wore a mullet like that, that might come in fashion again.
I don't think I've ever been harder in my life. Right?
That's why it was called Hard Target, because you will be hard. And the target you're hard about is the mullet. There's some subtext for you. Mr. Smith, what say you?
Really? I'm completely the same as you, but I'm all Hard Target. There is so little between them in the end. But I'm going to say this. This is an action movie podcast, okay?
Hard Target
has got the best fucking action. And it's mean, and it's nasty, it's ultra-violent, it gets the fucking job done. You got the best, possibly, in my opinion, the best action director in history doing the action. Granted, you know, if this film would have been made in Hong Kong, no one would be talking about it now, because it would just be among all the other amazing Hong Kong action movies. But this is an American action movie made by a global action artist. So for me, it's just got to be Hard Target, purely because it is just like a balls to the wall, awesome action movie. Yeah, the end is great, but there are other moments too. Clearly, you know, they're overshadowed by that great end. I'll give you that. So, hands down, the best of the action movies here, the best movie is Hard Target. But do what I did. Watch them both, and you'll have a Van Damme
good time.
Double bill of mullets and Jerry Curl juice and time travel, and the chick from Ferris Bueller's Day Off getting spit roasted by two Van Dammes. You got Lance Henriksen physically eating everybody on the set because he's a complete fucking maniac. And Wilford Brimley, you know, doing the best Creole accent. A Creole accident is what he is in this.
It was.
It's granted. But yeah.
With those sweet white boots.
Yeah, watch them both. They're both great. They're both worth your time. They're both elevated Van Damme. They've got the budget, and they've got Peter Hyams, John Woo, both great directors doing great things with a mediocre action star.
And the winner is
Steve scores the showdown 5-1 in favor of Hard Target, while Scott scores it 4-2 in favor of Time Cop, meaning we currently have a draw. So in the event that there is a draw, we go to the show's average Letterboxd score of each film based on Steve and Scott's ratings to decide our winner. And the winner with an average show Letterboxd score of 2.25 stars is Hard Target.
And now it is time for us to induct 4 more films, worthy films, I should say, into our top 100 films of all time.
The Cheeky Bastards top 100 films of all time.
First up this month, inducting number 71, as we're going to go 71 to 74, is Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, who are you inducting in as our 71st? And this is not in some kind of number order. It's just us picking them. And if you check out the Church of Tarantino's Letterboxd, you will see a list, and they're in alphabetical order of all the ones we've got. But coming in to the top 100 at number 71, who is the 71st inductee?
Okay, so first up, First Blood from 1982, directed by Ted Kotcheff. Now, attempts to make First Blood date back to the mid-70s with actors, get this, with actors such as Clint Eastwood, Robert De Niro, Ryan O'Neill, Dustin Hoffman, Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, Nick Nolte, John Travolta, Al Pacino, Kris Kristofferson, and Michael Douglas considered for the role of John Rambo.
Wow.
The film remained in development hell until Sylvester Stallone expressed interest, and the rest is action movie history. First Blood is a 1982 action masterpiece based on the 1972 novel by David Morrell. In the film, John Rambo is a troubled and misunderstood Vietnam veteran who must rely on his combat and survival skills when a series of brutal events of police brutality results in him having to survive a massive manhunt by police and government troops near the fictional small town of Hope, Washington. Sylvester Stallone in 1985 said, "The original Rambo was so bloodthirsty in the novel. The story was so hard, so terrifying every step of the way. I think that's one reason the book took so long to get done. What I did with Rambo was try to keep one foot in the establishment and one foot in the outlaw or frontier image. I wanted him to be accepted by the mainstream, but also be a criminal. So he has some strong patriotic views and he loves the system. He just doesn't like a lot of the people who live and work in it." Now, the film was made on a budget of $15 million and went on to make a staggering $125 million at the box office. In my opinion, Stallone has never been better, given the most intense and heartbreaking performance of his career, surrounded by a stellar supporting cast, including Brian Dennehy, Jack Starrett, David Caruso, and Richard Crenna. First Blood can now sit proudly with all the other heavy hitters on the Cheeky Bastards Top 100 Films of all time. What say you?
Love the film. And on my other podcast, we will be diving into the announcement that Tarantino had thought about making a remake of it, but direct to the book. So I love the film. Unfortunately, and not due to anyone's fault, when we got to the second one, it definitely started to jump into the action fair, keeping up with muscles and bullets and body count, as opposed to the real story that it got in our first go around. However, that being said, I am a big fan of Rambo. We may be talking about that later this year. Rambo number 4, but it was just called Rambo. So, but no, it's a spectacular movie. It's very few actors have the ability to take over 2 to 3 franchises and be the face of them. Him being Rocky and him being Rambo, most people hope to have a career like that. Few are able to overcome being one, the face of one franchise, let alone parlayed into being the face of another franchise and have both those franchises be separate and loved separately. So
yeah,
Stallone definitely is a rare breed, and we were lucky to be around in his time. Well, that will lead me to my first inductee of this month, and that's number 72, and it comes from 2015, and it is The Hateful Eight. Directed by Quentin Tarantino, this film is a masterclass in tension and Tarantino-esque storytelling, and maybe his most audacious and unapologetic to date. Set against the backdrop of post-Civil War Wyoming, the film unfolds like a gripping stage play, with each character harboring their own secrets and motivations. Quentin's trademark dialogue crackles with wit and menace, keeping audiences on the edge of their seats throughout the film's lengthy runtime. The ensemble cast delivers powerhouse performances, particularly Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, and Jennifer Jason Leigh, who command the screen with their electrifying presence. The film's lush cinematography and haunting score further elevate the experience, immersing its viewers in the snow-covered wilderness where trust is a rare commodity. The film's slow-burn pacing may test the patience of some viewers, but those who stick with it are rewarded with a series of jaw-dropping twists and turns that culminate in a violent and satisfying conclusion. While some may find the film's violence and language excessive, The Hateful Eight is a bold and unapologetic exploration of human nature at its darkest, making it a must-watch for fans of Tarantino's unique vision and reaffirms his status as one of the most daring filmmakers of his generation. And the film now proudly resides in our top 100 films of all time. As I have said in other places, this is my third favorite Tarantino film. I think it's like maybe the fourth one we put in, third or fourth one I put in. This is his most, I've always said, maybe one of his most original works he's ever done. I know that people think Once Upon a Time is a, you know, it's his love letter to Hollywood, and agreed. However, this is one of those ones where maybe there's another movie coming up that it definitely is paying homage to and is trying to figure out how it worked, but The Hateful Eight, it's everything you want in a Tarantino film. Juicy dialogue, amazing characters, and violence that just explodes off the screen, and ending with an amazing conclusion. And again, it earned Mr. Ennio Morricone his first ever Academy Award for original music. How say you, Mr. Smith?
Well, it's no secret I'm a big fan, Mr. Tarantino, and his track record is insane, really. He has to be what I consider the best, purely track record alone. And Hateful Eight, I mean, it's Agatha Christie, it's
John Carpenter, it's Sergio Leone,
Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, it's...
it's not totally original.
At the same time, it's not, exactly. There's echoes of those films and those references or influences, but at the end of the day, it is totally his own film.
He tries his hands at things and just creates these instant masterpieces, you know? So, oh yeah, for me, this is... I'm glad this is in our top 100.
And that'll bring us now to number 73. Mr. Smith, what is your final induction for March of 2024?
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974, directed by Toby Hooper. Just a quick review here from Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. Horror and exploitation films almost always turn a profit if they're brought in at the right price. So they provide a good starting place for ambitious would-be filmmakers who can't get more conventional projects off the ground. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre belongs in a select company with Night of the Living Dead and The Last House on the Left, the films that are really a lot better than the genre requires, not, however, that you'd necessarily enjoy seeing it. Now, when she hears that her grandfather's grave may have been vandalized, Sally and her paraplegic brother Franklin set out with their friends to investigate. After a detour to their family's old farmhouse, they discover a group of crazed, murderous outcasts living next door. As the group is attacked one by one by the chainsaw-wielding maniac Leatherface, who wears a mask of human skin, the survivors must do everything they can to escape. Toby Hooper cited changes in the cultural and political landscape as central influences on the film. His intentional misinformation that the film you're about to see is true. There was a response to being lied to by the government about things that were going on all over the world, including Watergate, the 1973 oil crisis, and the massacres and atrocities in the Vietnam War, the lack of sentimentality and the brutality of things that Hooper noticed while watching the local news, whose graphic coverage was epitomized by showing brains spilled all over the road, led to his belief that man was the real monster here, just wearing a different face. So I put a literal mask on the monster in my film. The idea of using a chainsaw as the murder weapon came to Hooper while he was in the hardware section of a busy store, contemplating how to speed his way through that crowd. So, one of, if not the most influential and groundbreaking horror movies of all time, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre still shocks and disturbs audiences this day, and now resides proudly in the Cheeky Bastards' top 100 movies of all time.
And that brings us to one that I think everyone can agree on. And it may be a synergetic predecessor to the one I already inducted. And at number 74 from 1982, it is The Thing. Now, obviously, The Hateful Eight would not exist of its own without this film as a major influence on that one. John Carpenter's The Thing is a cinematic tour de force that has earned its place as a pinnacle of horror and suspense. Set in the icy isolation of Antarctica, the film plunges viewers into a world of paranoia, mistrust, and unimaginable terror. From the opening frames, Carpenter expertly crafts an atmosphere of claustrophobia and dread, immersing the audience in the bleak and desolate landscape where a team of researchers discovers an ancient alien entity. As the creature begins to infiltrate and assimilate the group, suspicion and fear escalate, leading to a nerve-wracking battle for survival where no one is who they seem to be. At the heart of the film is Kurt Russell's riveting performance as the rugged helicopter pilot, MacCready, who becomes the reluctant leader in the fight against the otherworldly menace. Russell's betrayal perfectly captures the essence of a man pushed to the brink, balancing bravery with vulnerability in the face of overwhelming odds. But perhaps the true star of The Thing is the groundbreaking practical effects work by Rob Bottin, which remains unparalleled in its visceral and grotesque depiction of body horror. The transformations and creature designs are both mesmerizing and horrifying, creating images that linger long after the credits roll. With its spine-tingling suspense, gripping storyline, and revolutionary special effects, The Thing is a timeless classic that continues to thrill and terrify audiences decades after its release. A true masterpiece of horror cinema that demands to be experienced, and it now takes its rightful and deserving place in our top 100 films of all time.
Amen.
There's not much left to say about The Thing. If you haven't seen The Thing, get the fucking head out of your ass and see The Thing. It's a movie that, when it debuted, was considered a flop, was considered laughable and a bust. And how wrong were those people? Because it is, hands down, one of those films that people point to. We're 42 years since its debut, and no one truly knows who is or isn't the thing at the end of that film. It allowed filmgoers to have endings to films where not everything was answered, where you were allowed to take the film home with you, have debates, discussions, go back and watch the film again to see if you could prove your hypothesis of if MacCready actually was assimilated when we didn't see him on screen, was Childs assimilated while off screen. We do not know if either of them will survive the evening. Will they be frozen to death, or will they be frozen to thaw to create havoc later on? It is one of those films that continues to enthrall viewers of all ages when you watch it. And I've seen it on many different copies. I went to see it 2 years ago for its 40th anniversary. It is a spectacular film. I see it at least once a year. Beautiful, beautiful film. And John Carpenter just playing at the fucking top of his game. Just teabagging the rest of us and just showing us how it's done. And not many films have come close to either to reaching what The Thing is. Many films have tried. They desperately try to be like The Thing, and they just can't do it. So how say you on this masterpiece of a film from the great John Carpenter?
Not only is this John Carpenter's best, this is one of the best films of all time. This is a perfect movie.
Yes.
I don't think there's a misstep in this whole thing. I've lost count, you know, as a horror fan, you know, and growing up in the era I grew up in. Again, like you said, you know, putting the synergy between this and The Hateful Eight, it boggles my mind still to this day. And I do love that ending, the ambiguity of it all. And I don't think we're ever going to know. And I don't want to know.
No, me either.
No. Everyone's great in the film. That doomy, gloomy music score, that sense of foreboding and dread, the cinematography, just that them landscape, the landscape shots and the dogs. I mean, the dogs are eerie. There's some dog performances in this movie that are Oscar-worthy, you know? There's many films I love, adore, and I place high, but I could point flaws out in them films. I could not really point out a flaw in The Thing. That would have been in here if you hadn't have chosen, you know? That was going to be in here, and it should be in here. You know, it's a masterpiece. It's a John Carpenter masterpiece, too. So, yeah, absolutely love this film.
And there you have it, our four inductees for this month. Coming in at number 71, First Blood from 1982. At 72, The Hateful Eight from 2015. At 73, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. And at 74, The Thing from 1982.
That will do it for another action-packed movie showdown. Now you can join in on the debate and let us know who you had as the winner of this month's head-to-head cinematic battle by following the show on all its socials. Those links can be found in our show notes.
And be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for our latest episode of Dropping a Bruce, available, just like this podcast, exclusively on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing shows dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in the show's notes. We hope you'll drop in again next month as we pick two Steven Seagal action flicks against one another, as 1991's Out for Justice squares off against 1992's Under Siege for Seagal supremacy. So until then, stay explosive, my friends.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.